hello, welcome. Who else have we got just joining the call?
Hello, this is Dana Dudley.
Hi, Dana.
Hi.
A guest of honor has arrived.
You asked me to be early, and I'm sorry I got interrupted with two other calls, but I got here as fast as I could. How is everyone?
Still early.
Yes, I know.
We have Barry Carter on the line.
Hi, Barry.
Hi, Dana.
Well, Barry, I was trying to capture Tut so I could get him to stay closer to the house, but I haven't had much luck this week. He's such an independent little guy.
Yeah, I guess we're going to have no meowing online, huh?
No, I'm afraid not. I was hoping that I would get him to participate, at least to get him here. I probably would have had to pinch him. He's not much of a noisemaker. He's pretty placid. He's actually pretty, as Barry could attest, he glistens. He's so beautiful. He shines. Mm-hmm. He's got a beautiful coat of fur, and his tail is totally repaired. I don't see any evidence whatsoever. I was actually showing the tail the other day to a man that came out to my office to do some computer work, and we were discussing this infamous cat. And I told him that the cat is probably more famous than most of us will ever be because he has a new tail. And he didn't seem to know he wasn't supposed to grow a new tail. You give him what he needed, and it was like fixing a car. He just fixed his own self, especially if you'd have seen what it looked like. Ooh, it was terrible. What a mangled mess. But I have.
How did the tail get taken off?
Well, I'm not absolutely positive, but my mom and I think that what actually occurred, I live in North Carolina, and we get these freak storms, and that's what had happened the day that we found him. I'd had him for about 3 days, and I have a back door that's an old back door, and it's not secure, and apparently the wind, we had closed it because of the upcoming storm, but apparently the wind blew it open. He escaped, and we found him out at the outbuilding, and I think what occurred was a piece of the old tin. I don't know if you've ever been really far out in the countryside in America, but some farm areas have these old outbuildings that seem to have been there 50 or 60 years, and I have one of those on my property. I'm just letting nature knock it down. But the storms, every once in a while, there'll be a bad one, and they'll knock down another part of it. So that's how I believe it happened, but I have no knowledge personally of how it happened. But I do know that when we brought him inside, you know, my mom had said, well, let's take him to the vet. And I told her, no, let's not, and pretend we did, because he hasn't been here very long, and animals have a tendency to fix themselves if you leave them alone. I think with him being such of a young age, it's possible the vet would give...
Question about the tail. Was his tail cut off clean, or was it sort of mangled at the end?
It was mangled, but then after about a day or so, he came around the corner. He was a little bit skittish. I'm sure that he was frightened. And he came around the corner in the kitchen, and I have the cabinets have those little edges on them, and it caught, and it just dropped it right on the floor. But it was about to come off. And so I was I was torn because, you know, you don't want to see an animal in pain. But it didn't seem to have an effect. He seemed to be more but he didn't seem to be affected by it. It didn't seem, and it did, certainly didn't stop his crying. He was very, very young and had lost his mother, so it didn't affect the crying. He still did that, but he was already using some of the different Orma supplements by that, yeah.
Are you talking about the cat whose tail started to grow back?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
Yeah, his name is King Tut, but kind of shortened it right after the tail episode to Tut. But,
well, he's doing much better now, right?
Oh, his tail is fully there. He's not missing anything anymore.
Wow, that's amazing.
I know. It's utterly amazing. If you had seen the entire process face-to-face daily the way that we did, it would be even more amazing because you could actually see the development. Barry got to see it when he was here, and we examined it closely to take a good look at it. But you could actually see the tissue and the hairs in development along the tail.
Did you know Tut's age when it happened?
The best I could hear, when we first found him, he had to be somewhere between 5 and 6 weeks old, and it happened. So he was young. Hi, Rich. This is Dana.
Hi.
Now, Dana has been working with Ormus on plants for longer than just about anybody I know. And I think she's going to talk a bit about that, aren't you, Dana?
Yeah, I will be happy to. There are some unique experiences and some pictures. I added some more pictures, by the way, Barry, of some different areas, some of the people that we've involved over the years. You've always asked if I would do that. People are slow to send pictures. But
I just looked at some of the pictures of Tut's tail. Poor baby.
I know.
And
but
is
now
he
there's
good?
Nothing. Now there's no reason to feel sorry for him. He's proud and arrogant. He struts his stuff, as they say. He's had 5 children, too.
Wow.
So obviously it did no harm.
That is pretty good for a male cat.
Yeah, well, they had their female cat fixed. They weren't crazy about having those little kittens. Yeah, no, my neighbors have a very pretty cat, and apparently she came across the road and visited with him for a while.
Cats will do that.
Yeah, I thought it was funny when she brought me a couple of the kittens and said, these are yours. So
his whole tail grew all the way back?
It has.
That's
it
amazing.
I know. Not amazing to me or to him, but it's amazing if you look at the backside of it when he had a little itty-bitty stub.
Right, he had a lot of damage there, you could see.
Oh yeah,
in the pictures.
Oh, and I have the I have the little tiny scab that fell off of there too. I put everything in a bag. Good.
Hi there. We're about to get underway. G'day, Dylan from Long Island. So listen, we're going to have our official kickoff right now with our guest of the day, who is Dana Dudley, going to regale us quite a few stories and start off retelling the story that we've heard a couple of times about her famous cat. King Tut, or Tut for short, and also regale about some of the stories that people have had using her and other people's Ormus. So you'd never show up.
Hi, Dan.
Well, welcome. So anyway, as I was saying, it is completely unprecedented that a creature will just grow a whole new limb.
This is Tim from Oklahoma.
So I'd like to welcome to the call Dana Dudley, and so tell us a little bit about how you got involved with Ormus. Dana?
Well, I kind of come by it naturally. My dad attended medical school in Southern California in the 40s, and he did not like what he saw in mainstream medicine. And he went the way of the classic healing, which is more biblical healing, as he was raised that way, more toward the spiritual side of things and try to do things as natural. He didn't cotton too much that drugs would be an answer long term, but he didn't really enjoy the mainstream practice, so he pulled away and went on and got his degrees and was involved in physics and solved a lot of problems. And I had the opportunity, I had a failed marriage, many of us have had, and when I did, I had to have something to do, so my dad wanted me to come and work with him because he was always short of people that he could rely upon, so I did that. So I got an opportunity to see his early involvement, and we had gone at an early time when David Hudson had first done some initial studies trying to figure out what was going on. He called in a lot of different people, and a lot of people heard about it, talking about it to other people. And my dad took a fancy, if you want to call it that, to what was going on, and he began his own type of independent research. And I never even knew until I had actually gotten a phone call from somebody that there was a thing called Ormus. It was just an alternative cellular energy pathway to us. It was just a way of utilizing what nature already puts in place and using it more harmoniously for the body. And
alternative cellular energy, that's why you call it ACE?
Yes, because it's an alternative cellular energy, and it creates a different pathway. It seems to really prompt the spirit. So we were studying it for a long time, and after my parents had first been married, my father took my mom to the Great Salt Lake to the north side and showed her some things that he thought were unique about the lake. And they constantly visited from Southern California on a regular basis. And then during the 60s, more experiments started. They were locking in some of the land and doing some research. There was a lot of information about minerals and the importance that they play in the human body and the uniqueness of that lake. And he always seemed to orbit toward that lake. Some of the things that I learned growing up were, you know, the fact that it's one of the largest animal migratory parts of the world. And so I've taken my own children, and we've made many trips on different time periods during the decades to go out there and see what we can. And my most recent one was just within the past year where I spent some time out there. It's a very interesting place. I live, as Barry knows, he's been out to North Carolina and stayed in my very small, quaint little country house. And we've gone out to the Atlantic, and we were appalled at the conditions that we saw, because they're some of the dirtiest, most putrid water that you could imagine, the way that it blows in. There's a lot of shipping canals that are out here, and it seemed all the dirt and debris seems to come down the East Coast and land a lot of it out in that vicinity. So it's not the best of places if you want to actually pull Ormus or create Ormus. But anyway, to make a long story short, during the very late 80s and the early 90s, I was making batches in Minnesota with my friends, and we were doing crop studies to see what would occur. My one friend, Jimmy, is a farmer. He set aside about 10% of his acreage. He had a smaller farm, about 400 acres of land. And so he dedicated about 40 acres of that, and we did a controlled study in the center of all of his crops among all places. But that was because we didn't want it really visible from the road. We just wanted to see what would occur. And what happened, and he's down in the Owatonna area of Minnesota, but we ended up those first few years where we were really applying it and doing some work with it, we ended up with corn that would stand right back up after a bad tornado would whip through and ruin a lot of crops. I ended up with about, probably conservatively speaking, maybe about 5 to 7 times the amount of tomatoes as any of my neighbors in my backyard, and my cucumbers were about as long as from the tip of my fingers close to my elbow, which really, for cucumbers, that's pretty big. Even with a growing family like I had, it was way too many. And I had put in too many different varieties, so I ended up calling a lot of people from church to come and help me pick this stuff. My neighbor was the chief of police, and his garden, we had gotten hit in the early 90s with some very extreme weather. The Mississippi River had overflowed. About everybody's crops were destroyed, and yet my garden didn't seem to be affected at all. In fact, it seemed to produce the biggest crop. Maybe the moisture assisted it. I also noticed that earthworms hatched right out of the ground. I did an experiment over in the Rochester area with a friend of mine that owned a gladiola company that did bulbs. And what we saw happen the very first year was that the normal corm production would be about 1, possibly 2 corms coming out of the original gladiola. And what we saw happen was sometimes as many as 15. Of course, many of those were too immature, but on an average, anywhere from 5 to 7. And so we were just kind of poking around. And then around 1993, we were still doing a lot of these. You know, I'd drive up to Brainerd and get another friend of mine involved, or I'd go to Illinois and involve another friend. And we were making our own mixtures at that time. And I'd periodically go out to the Great Salt Lake and get some extractions and let them sit and just thicken up. I didn't realize that there was some kind of a specific process that maybe some people are using. To me, it makes like a soup, like a heavy content, and it's kind of, it feels somewhat thicky. I'm sure that has a great deal to do with the fact that there's so many minerals in there. But what I've seen happen with it is absolutely incredible things with people's health. I had a friend of mine that lived in Utah that fell off of a roof. And I had told him, well, just see what happens if you help yourself with some, because maybe it'll enhance your life. It seems to enhance the lives of plants and small animals, so let's see what happens. Well, he had several shattered vertebrae in his back, and he had been in a tremendous amount of pain, and what we noticed right away was he was able to get through the day without all this pain. In fact, I still work with him today. I just had an opportunity to listen to him earlier today on another conference call that we did. So it's amazing what happens to people's lives when they're impacted in a positive way with what happens with this mysterious water. I would call it life water. Or I don't know what else to call it, because it seems to give back the life to people. It's if you're doing your own Ormus, I strongly encourage you to continue to do that, because the people that consume it, they can do their own research, they can come to their own conclusions. But I had a very interesting call earlier this week from a man who's going to make some natural juices available to the public, and he said he wanted to work with us. He had done some studies, and I had said to him, it's a really neat thing. I'll send some to you since you're interested in including it in some food that people will be consuming that's going to be a natural drink. I'll send you some so you can check it out. I want to have you do a basic couple of things with it. So I told him to take a frying pan and pour some in and let it heat up on the stove, and then leave it alone and come back a few hours later and take a look. So he burned it off, and it turned into a really fine white powder. And he called me back several hours later, and he said it blew his mind because it was back to a liquid, that it had pulled back all the moisture, but it was even stronger than it had been before when he touched it to the tip of his tongue. He could feel the heat transfer. So that was pretty amazing. He called me earlier this week because we're releasing a new formula to the world. We just did do that this past week, and the stories we're already getting from it are absolutely incredible. I've been involved with a lot of different doctors that have done research with this, been to Bethesda, Maryland, worked across the country and done a lot of lectures about this, participated with people who are adding it now into different foods and putting it into supplements because of the life-giving properties of it. But I could talk about my next-door neighbor. He grew up here in the South, and this area, maybe many of you are familiar with it, this area is known for its bootlegging. And during Prohibition, this was one of the most popular places in the country to ship illegal liquors, and they did a lot of still here, you know, stills and operations like that, and that's how actually the racing capital of the country got situated in part of North Carolina. And his family had always been in the production of this liquor, and consequently he was a consumer from an early age, and it was really affecting his health. And I had said to him, I've got a couple of scientists that are friends of mine. One's coming in to visit me from Australia, and one's coming from Utah. It'd be really great if you came down and met a couple of my friends. So he attended a lecture, and they talked about this mystical type property of these things, and he really wanted to get off of the problems it was affecting him. He was taking medications for high blood pressure. He was taking medications for a heart problem. He'd already had one minor heart attack. He was suffering from acid reflux disease and was taking medication for depression on an occasional basis, and he didn't like what was happening with his life. But after they talked with him, he decided to give this a shot and see if it would help. And what happened was within 5 days, he's never touched liquor again. But the amazing part of what I saw, having known him for well over 10 years at that time, was my friend was a really big listener of country music. In fact, I can't think that I ever had him pull up in my yard or ever saw him in his or met him in public where he didn't have his radio on with some country music playing. And that's kind of that somebody done me wrong song type of music. And what I noticed about 3 weeks after he began to consume this is I had occasion to go next door and visit with him. And what I saw was the music was spiritual music. And I questioned him about it and asked him why wasn't he listening to his normal music. And he replied to me that this is what he'd always been listening to. What was wrong with me? So that's kind of a strange story. Now, I was with my doctor's group, and we were traveling in the Midwest a couple of years ago doing lectures there, and we were going to see one of my friends who is an Ormus producer in Oklahoma, and his son is, one of his sons is a chiropractor, the other one is a veterinarian, and one of the doctors that I work with was very interested in the virology of what occurs with this, and he knew that I had some friends that were not on any particular type of a list but had been studying it for many years, and so we went to go see my friend outside of Tulsa, and we did a lecture there, and then he got an opportunity to go through this little small lab that he has built, and he was just utterly overwhelmed when he saw how complex the entire system was that he had created, because he had built a pyramid that each one of the levels of the pyramid were a different element. Every bit of the pyramid that he built was a precise measurement exactly according to the ancient pyramids in Egypt, scaled down in size. And he had a camera and he could photograph this vortex flow above that pyramid, and he had angled the pipes and the water system in his business where he was doing his production to go up over that so that it would feed up to where that pipe was at. And he had put light spectrums in the flow, and he had some clear tubing, so he had all these different lights attached of different hues of the light spectrum. And he also had recorded all these positive words onto CDs. And so we had these CDs. You couldn't hear them, but they were running. And the CD resonance from the sounds that he had programmed to these discs were going in as well. And when he took the samples back, he had made it into like a gel. It was like a slippery, odorless, tasteless type of a gel. And he had said that it helped his son with his chiropractic business, that they could apply this gel to the back of their, there. That might have helped. Anyway, what happened was he took these samples back to L.A. and he took them to UCLA and USC, and they were blown away with the results when they turned around and put the samples in with viruses and bacteria. And he said it would have been nice if some of those doctors and professors out there had had an opportunity to see what he had seen, how that was being done, because he's worlds ahead of where they're at right now. First of all, with the acceptance of these things, and second of all, with the production of them. So that's a pretty amazing man. But while we were there, we had done a lecture, and we were in Tulsa, and we had met with, it was Dr. John Martin and myself and Dr. Thomas Glass. Many of you may have heard of Tom before. He is the doctor who was the pathologist who worked with the Oklahoma City bombing victims. It's a very sad time in history, and as a pathologist, he's very interested in these things, and so we had met for breakfast, and we had done a lecture that afternoon, and I asked in the audience if there was anyone there who knew anyone who had lupus, because we were doing a controlled study on lupus, and a gentleman in the back raised his hand and said that his neighbor, a couple blocks from him in Kansas, had suffered severely from lupus for about 22 years, about 18 of which were absolutely miserable and had left her with an inability to turn around and even deal with a job anymore. And so I volunteered to follow him with my daughter and go up and meet with this charming woman, and we met her late on a Sunday night. And Judy, there's information about her, I think, on my website currently, but Judy volunteered to be a subject and do some research herself and report her findings. And she had never had any success whatsoever. And all of a sudden, the pain that she had been having in the outbreaks and the problems just seemed to dissipate. And during a period of a couple of months, she was able to turn around and resume her normal life activities. She still had a little bit of pain with her lower back occasionally, but all of the other problems seemed to disappear within a couple of months. So that's another success story for someone who was using something for the spiritual part of it and saw something incredible happen to her life.
What year was
that? That was a couple of years ago, Barry. We had gone out there. She's still using our products and still is having very good success. I recently worked with a gentleman here in town. One of my friends is just recently retiring from the U.S. Post Office. She has a friend of hers that's in his 80s, and about 6 years ago he had a massive stroke, leaving half of his body with the inability to function. And when I met him in October, he had no ability to tie his shoes. He had no ability to button his shirt. He had to have a cane that was more like a crutch, and it attached to his upper arm to give him mobility so that he could get from place to place and walk. And he had part of his body was dragging behind him. And now, it's been since November, he's able to walk without the cane 8 to 10 times daily around Walmart. He's back to driving his car. I asked him last week what he wanted to do next, what was the next most important thing to him, because he conquered one of the two things that he said were the most important to him. One of those was to be able to have his independence and be able to drive again, and the second one is that he would be able to dance. And I told him if he continued with what he was doing, there was an absolutely excellent chance that by this summer he could go to Myrtle Beach and dance with his friends again. So it's absolutely amazing what we see happen around us.
Well, could you tell us again about Tut? Could you tell us again about Tut? We interrupted you before, and that was before all of the people in the free room got on.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I'll give you a little bit of background about my cat. He wandered into my yard, and my mother and I found him crying underneath the back of my car. It had been raining outside the night before, and it was around Mother's Day. And he was just crying and crying and crying, and my mom heard him because she likes to sit in the backyard, and she came and got me and said, "Something is under your car." And she had gotten down, but she couldn't see anything. Of course, Tut was pure black. So I reached down, and this little tiny ball of fur, absolutely soaking wet, shivering, was what my hand put itself around. And I pulled up this just tiny, tiny kitten. But anyway, what happened was I reached underneath by the tire, and I pulled out this little tiny soaking ball of fur. And it was a very tiny kitten. I believe that at the time that I found Tut, he must have been 5 or 6 weeks old. And my mom, of course, well, it's a kitten. She didn't want it in the house, but it was evidently, I mean, it was so thin and so small and so wet, and it was just shaking uncontrollably. So I brought it in the house and dried it off. My natural instinct is to leave nature alone and let it take its course, but I knew that if it had been under the car for some time and was that wet, it was going to need some help. So I just squirted a bunch of different Ormus things into a bowl because I knew it was very, very tiny and wasn't going to be able to take anything in the way of solid food at that time. So I just took a bunch of different Ormus things that I have, some that I've made and some that other people have made, and put them in the bowl and encouraged the kitten to lap some up. And it took to it right away, just like if it was milk. And I figured that this is good because at least it's going to get some nourishment, and it's going to get it from the cellular point because it's missing its mother. I'm not going to go and get a can of something that who knows what it is or where it came from that may contain chemicals. I'll just put nature at work. And so I did that. And then I added a lot of water to it, so that it would get plenty of fresh water. So I added a Bovis water to it so that there would be some energy field into the water. And so the cat drank it, and then it fell asleep, and I held it for quite some time. And then, of course, I did the natural thing. It's kind of, it took a handkerchief and tied it around my waist and just carried it next to me so that it would feel comfortable. And I started doing what any mother would do for a child, just take care of it. This was obviously an orphan. And so on the third day, the meowing, because it was frantically looking for its real mother, of course, the meowing was driving my mom and I just crazy. So I decided I would put it out on my back porch, which there's an outside door that doesn't latch very well. But I put it there so that we could get some sleep, because we'd already had two sleepless nights with this cat meowing. So I put it out there. But apparently, And there was a storm that blew up during the night, too, and it apparently blew that back door open, because in the morning when we both got up around 7, the cat was missing, and so my mom was kind of glad it was missing, I think, a part of her, because she wouldn't have to hear this meowing all night. But I went out in the yard because I was looking for it. I knew it didn't have anybody to take care of it, and it couldn't survive on its own, and I found it by following its noise. I found it out there by my old outbuilding, and apparently a portion of this old country collapsing outbuilding made out of old timber and tin that's been abandoned probably for 30 or 40 years, it had collapsed, and I think that's what cut the tail. But the tail wasn't off, but the kitten was back to the same shape, wet and shivering, only this time it had a damaged tail. I brought it inside the house, and it went to sleep. I had given it some more of the different ormus, and I'd used several different things. Barry has some of them on there that I noticed were in the Ormus group, and then I gave it some other ones that I had made and a couple of my friends had made. And so that's basically what this kitten lived on, and then as it began to, a few days later, the tail, it came around the kitchen cabinet. Its tail was right at the right angle, and it grabbed it, and I actually didn't realize that the cat had lost its tail right away. I came into the kitchen and saw something dark on the floor and leaned over and realized, and at first I thought it was a mouse or something, and you know how you're taken back instantaneously. You pull your hand back, and then I realized it was the tail. So I picked it up and put it in a bag. Actually, I think I just laid it on my desk at that time, and I talked to my mom about it, and she had said to me we should take this kitten to the vet and have the vet do something, and I kept telling her, no, we're just going to let nature take its course. It's either going to live or it's not. It's either going to be healthy or it's not. We're just going to leave it alone and not interfere in what happens. So the cat began to grow the tail mysteriously within a short time.
One time you said that you were putting on some hand cream or something?
Yeah, I was. It was a strange thing. I had mixed the hand cream from Chaz Guest. He has a hand cream. I don't remember what he calls it. He might have called it Zola or something like that. Cleopatra's Milk, maybe. He had a name for it at that time. And I had taken that, and I always squirt some of my Ormus into it because his was more of an oily consistency, and I didn't like that. I liked the wicking action more dry, so I mixed a couple Ormuses together, and I had put it, and I was rubbing my hands and putting some on my face, and I was seated at my desk, and Tut was on my lap, and all of a sudden, Tut started licking my hands. So I decided I'll just do it again, and he just kept on lapping this up, and he constantly, in fact, for the first year to a year and a half, if I even opened a bottle of any type of Ormus, he would come from wherever he was, just like it was calling him or something, and he would just appear. I have a couple of dogs who still do the same thing that are house dogs. One of them, Barry fondly refers to as my yappy little dog, Swiss, and the other one is new since Barry's been out here, and her name is Minx, but both of them, you don't even hear them right now. They're so occupied with their own selves. They're very quiet, very peaceful dogs, very loving, and they'll give you a hug and lick your neck. But where Tut's concerned, I noticed this thing that happened with him right away was I began to notice, and I was discussing this with Barry, at which time he asked me if I would take some pictures, and then shortly after that, Barry came in person to see this cat. But what I noticed happened with the cat was his tail, that it was about an inch long, the scab fell off, but when the scab fell off, it might have been a week and a half or something like that after, when the scab actually fell off, this nub, I noticed that there was new hair forming and that there was skin that was almost transparent, and at the tip of it was this bulbous mass, and at the very end of that, there was these little white specks. And I discussed it with Barry because I wasn't sure what was happening with the cat, and he said he thought from the description that it sounded like the cat was trying in its own way to actually rebuild what had been removed from this accident. So I started monitoring it, and what I noticed by the time Barry came out, Barry, do you remember, was it July or August that year that you came out?
Yeah, it was...
maybe a couple months.
The date was August 14th, 1978. took the picture.
Yeah, so that had to be maybe about 7 months, 7 weeks or so after this occurrence had happened. I think that the tail, we took a picture of it, was about 5 inches long at that time, wasn't it, Barry?
It was 5 or 6 inches, I think. I'd say maybe 5.
Well, it seemed to me...
5 inches of new growth.
5 inches. Yeah, I thought it was. It seemed to me it was 5 or 6 inches at that time. But it's now, when I captured him the last time, I actually measured his tail, and it's almost 12 inches long. I don't know what a normal length of a cat tail is.
12 inches is quite a longer than normal tail.
It's a longer than normal tail? Well, his tail measures from where his anus is to the tip of his tail. It measures about 12 inches. It's hard. He wanted to pull it away from me when I stuck the ruler there. But I was able to get, it appears to be right about 12 inches long. I wasn't sure how long it should be. I also noticed that he's got very long legs, so he stands pretty tall for a typical cat. He also is very lustrous. He still has that very, do you remember when you were here how he kind of glowed at night and had that kind of a very, very shiny coat? He still
beautiful.
Has that.
Wow.
An absolutely beautiful coat, very luxurious and very, very soft.
And how long did you, you still are feeding him with formula?
I still do. Yes, I still do. I have an outbuilding that doesn't have a door on it, and I have my lawnmower and my gardening equipment and things and that, and I just don't really care that much if I ever do put a door on it. I put a bowl out there, and I go out there, and because Ormus is funny and it brings back the water, it doesn't matter if what I put in there, it'll pull moisture back to it anyway, and I just leave it, and I go out there several times a week and fill that little bowl back up. I don't feed him any food anymore. I went through a period where I would cook for him or I would give him raw meat and things, but now he's a hunter and he eats the mice and things out there. I think it's more beneficial for him to catch his own than to be dependent on me to provide for him.
Because the mice are probably eating that water too, so it's a good
thing. Oh, I would imagine so. Yeah, I would imagine.
Does it make his meals more hearty?
Pardon me?
Does it make his meals more hearty?
Well, I live out in the country. We're using it on the cotton crops here, too. I have some pictures of my fields. And I had a doctor that lives out in the middle of the state. She was with her husband, Harold, one day, and they were coming back from out at the ocean. And they were on the highway, and she said that when she saw my cotton field, this was 2 years ago, when she saw my cotton field, she made her husband turn their van around and come back. I had never met her before, and now she's part of our foundation. But she had a gentleman that was visiting with her that was from Russia, and she wanted to get some samples of the cotton. So she wanted to know if she could pick some, and I started laughing. I said, this is the South. It's the southern picking cotton producing country. Yes, of course you can. So she got some of the cotton. But the bowls are absolutely enormous. And we had, in previous years before we started using it on the crops here, we had about 4 to 5 bales, and this past fall I think there were about 11 from the acreage. There's about 40 acres of actual cotton that's being grown here on the land, maybe a little less because I've got some woods out there.
So it's almost tripled.
Yeah, it has. It has.
Doubled.
Yeah, and I put some pictures of my pear tree. When Barry was here, we did some Ormus and dumped some only on the north side of the tree. We never bothered with putting anything on the south side, and what happened was I had to actually prop up the tree with 2x4s because the limbs were so heavy and there were pears inside and outside the canopy, but this tree was almost dead when Barry saw it when he was here. It wasn't producing anything. It was very damaged because in previous years, whoever the land tenants were, they'd used a lot of crop chemicals and fertilizers on the soil, and so there wasn't good results, and it had stunted this tree terribly, and it was putting off little branches that were 3 or 4 inches long. Now the ones I go out there and I'm still only watering one side of the tree each year, and one side of the tree has limbs on it that are 3, 4, 5 feet long. The other side of the tree only produced dwarf fruit, if at all, and the branches that are growing on it are still only a few inches, kind of not very good looking little branches. Pardon me?
You have a split personality tree.
Yeah, I actually do. It's pretty wild when you're looking at it from the road because the tree almost looks like it's heavy on one side and is about to tip over. But I've always thought it would be neat to just grow one tree without dealing with the entire system of roots and not do the tree on the other side and see what happens with the tree for the production of pears. So I haven't ever watered the other half of the pear, you know, on the tree. I'm only watering the north side. Pardon?
Watering it at all or watering it with ormus?
I'm watering it with ormus, but I'm only watering on the north side of the tree. I'm not putting enough there that it could ever get to the other side of the tree.
Soaking the ground
around it.
At all?
Pardon?
Do you water the other side of the tree at all?
No, I'm not putting anything. I'm just letting nature do its own thing on the other side of the tree. So what I'm doing is putting about a gallon. I'm mixing about a gallon and taking it about 3 feet away from the trunk of the tree, but only on the north side, and only going in a straight line across on the north side, as much water as that will be. But apparently it seems to be enough that the root system with the rain seems to be getting enough of the micronutrients that it's actually making a change. I don't know what's going to happen with it now. We had a major frost here. It killed everything. But I heard someone earlier say that they didn't have a loss this winter. Well, neither did I. I even have some geraniums, which are not supposed to winter over at all in the ground, and they're popping up geranium leaves all over the place right now. I had planted in some tires. We all know that you can't do much with petroleum products. I had taken some old tires and I put them around as a bumper guard around this little pond area that I have, and I had just set it in there where there had been a damaged root and from a previous tree, and the tree had died, and so I put this to cover it up so nobody would fall in this little naturally occurring hole. And when I did that, I put these tires, and so I filled them all up with dirt. And just before Mother's Day last year, I took a bulb from the previous year that they were selling for like a dollar or whatever for these nice bulbs, but they should have been in the soil the fall before. Well, I put them in just before Mother's Day, gave them a good shot of ormus and left them alone, and then I watered them twice last year, and now every place I had one or two bulbs that I had placed in the tire, I have anywhere from 14 to 29 plants that have come up.
Wow.
And so it's going to be an absolute profusion of color very shortly because they're all developing very beautifully. So, and I've used it on my gladiolas, and I put it up against the house on some small trellises. A couple different kinds of vines.
A couple of years ago, you got oranges
from Brazil. Yeah. Well, outside of the fact that they're sweeter and taste better, there's not really too much to tell other than take a look at the pictures. They're huge.
Now, they came from Brazil, is that it?
Yeah, those were from Brazil. And there's California oranges. My daughter and I were out there in the fall of 2005, and I have a picture of her standing near my grandparents' grove of oranges, and the trees are just filled. Riverside, the University of California at Riverside is very active in agriculture and looks over that property these days. They don't use any chemical or anything there, and the trees are just flourishing. Now, typically they should be dead because those are the original orange groves that were there. There's a native orange tree in Southern California in Riverside that came from Spain. It's alleged that it is the oldest orange tree in Southern California, and it is a navel, and it's on the university property in Riverside, and it's on Magnolia Avenue. And they actually had to bend the road to go around where it's at. And the tree must be 100 years old or older, and it's still producing oranges all the time, and they're just abundant.
I'm going to the alternative phone. Is that better?
That's terrific.
Okay, good. The connection between that oldest orange tree in California and ormus, Dana, I missed that connection. Would you spell it out for us?
Well, when you're talking about ormus, Southern California has always been a very heavy environmental area to experiment with things. Some of the doctors that I work with on this team are doing studies all over Southern California. I had a meeting with some doctors working with energy medicine that were from UC Irvine, that were from UCLA, that were from USC, that were from UC Santa Cruz, et cetera. We've been doing some work directly with Cal Poly and their ag department in studying these things because it is not just the general population who wishes to know how these things work. It's scientists and doctors have a very, very aggressive role because the country's become very ill. People are consuming things that were never intended for the human body, and as a result, a lot of people are suffering needlessly. So when they're studying these things, these are agricultural areas anyway. If there's an answer and you can use a seaweed extracted out of the ocean and can put that to work, seaweed is not a huge expense. It's just pulling it out. If you can concentrate that seaweed extract and use that on the crops, that's a naturally occurring ormus too. Ormus is in everything. We found some in Kansas, in the wheat field up there. So I don't know if that really answers the questions, but as far as ormus, I think that there's a lot more studies ongoing, but everyone doesn't know that there's a particular group that they could join. I've invited a number of different doctors that I know to join this group. Many of them do not have time and have never joined.
Now, was the stuff in California, was that ACE or was that...
Well, they've done a lot of different things, Barry. They've studied a lot of different naturally occurring mineral substances. My aunt and uncle, for instance, had moved in the early 1960s. My aunt was a science teacher in Riverside, and she moved her entire family from where we had all these orange groves in Riverside. They bought all this volcanic land with all the lava rock up in the Mount Shasta area of Northern California, and they grow abundant crops, but they do everything organically. The soil is very, very rich there. They've never had to enhance it with anything. But if you study the composition of the soil, you'll see that it has much more minerals in the soils, and that probably explains a great deal of the why.
Lava seems to attract those minerals.
Yes.
The lava attracts.
You're hilarious. Yeah, I think you're correct, because I know that there was a...
I can't believe that you're saying that.
Sorry.
Can you guys hear me now? Or am I having to shout?
I can hear you now.
Good.
Okay,
can you hear me better now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Good.
Definitely. Now, we did a small study with a friend of mine that's a tobacco grower here in North Carolina, and we did about 65 acres using our ormus in a diluted form. He had to... They have mowing equipment inside the greenhouse. It's a machine, and it mows off the tops when it gets to a certain point, which encourages the root system to grow much stronger. And what we saw happen the first year we did this was that he had four mowings of ours, and he had one quarter was using Monsanto's typical fertilizer. And what happened with that was it was stunted growth. He had only about a 50% success rate of the seeds even maturing. And on ours, he said that it was somewhere up between, depending on which area we were in and how much we had given it, it was between about 88 to about 96% of the seeds matured. But he had to do four cuttings of it before he ever had to cut once for the Monsanto area. And what he noticed was when it got to be the heat of the summer, the Monsanto didn't ever topple out and flower the way that a typical tobacco plant would. It should have, but it didn't. And so he ended up with larger leaves and a better crop, and yet it was just a change in the water. In fact, we were out there taking pictures of what he was going to use and how he was going to use it, etc. And we found a big 400-gallon tank, and we poured some of it in, and we tried to get the measurements about right on what it should be, but we were guesstimating it. But we noticed there was an enormous growth, and he had much more productivity. And I had said to him, well, if you did this, it seems you would be able to retire your farm debt earlier. So there's a lot of people that are taking an active stance on this. And I've told him, you know, let me give you some simple instructions on how you can make this yourself. You don't have to buy it. You can make it yourself. It's simple ingredients. It's a simple enough process. And we encourage people to do this because that way you can control your own outcome. And you seem to transfer a bit of yourself into the ormus that you make yourself. It's always a good idea to not have people around when you do it. Try to do it when you're by yourself and when you're in a, I think, what I consider to be a more meditative date, more prayerful attitude. When I'm very relaxed, I try to do things in the evening or at night when the phone isn't likely to ring. Mm-hmm. And I always put some type of music. I play a series of music called success songs, which you can, you know, get off of the internet, because it basically is living life from a higher vibration. And so I use the powerful songs, very inspirational type music when I make something. And I've given a lot of gifts. Had a little boy out here who was extremely autistic and at 9 years old had never attended school. His parents had gotten divorced prior to the time that he was ever diagnosed as being autistic, and his mother had not been able to work because he had had a lot of problems with interfacing with anyone. She couldn't even take him to church because it would be very disruptive. And I talked with his uncle, and then I talked with his mom and with her parents, and we started a nice regime with her son, and we've seen very, very phenomenal results. We also worked with a little boy that was an autism poster child from one of the states, and his neurologist just has given a report that he should, by the time he's 12, have a life of a typical 12-year-old child without any evidence of all of these problems that have occurred in the past. So I think it's miracles that I see. That's what I think it is.
You mentioned when you were showing me, when you sent me the pictures of the orange, that you would commonly feed your little dog orange slices.
Yeah, I didn't know that dogs didn't like oranges. I didn't understand that some animals aren't going to like them. I just did it automatically. Whatever I'm eating, Barry, I always just give to the dogs. As a matter of fact, I don't know if anybody here knows about Bible bars, but I have two dogs where if I go to eat one, because it's a really quick snack, it actually is a meal, and it's based on healthy eating principles. Everything in it is totally natural and doesn't contain anything other than organic with no chemicals added. And so when I go to eat those, they're just on me. They jump. If I even pull one out of the cabinet, they come running. The same thing with these oranges. I also didn't think that they would eat grapefruit. How wrong I was. Huh. They ate the grapefruit, too.
These are the grapefruits that were grown with the orange.
Yes, And what I saw about the grapefruits was, I went to the supermarket, I went to Harris Teeter's to try to find the largest grapefruits I can, and I was unable to find a grapefruit that could even compare in size. The other thing that I noticed about it was the ones from Harris Teeter had a very, very thin rind to them, and this grapefruit had a thick rind, almost as if it was protecting the fruit inside.
Wow.
The grapefruit was not bitter or tart. It actually was very, very sweet. And my mom has always avoided, since she was in her 30s, eating grapefruit. I encouraged her to taste the grapefruit, and my mom polished off the entire box that I had received. I never got a chance to eat them, but I found her in the backyard one day feeding it to the dog.
Oh.
That's how I was aware that the dog liked grapefruit, too. But I don't think
I don't like
abnormal.
Grapefruit.
I think it's totally normal for animals to consume these things. Uh-huh. Well, there's pictures of them on my website on rhinoed.org under the Our Research page. You can look at them. If there's fragmentations of any pages there, if you would please email me when you click in so I can correct it, because we moved it to the .org site, and there's still some pages that don't paginate correctly. But you can look at it on that page at some of the research that we've done.
Org.
Yeah, it's
rhinoed.org.
Yeah. And we
listen, are there any people who have any questions of Dana? Because Dana has talked quite a bit, and so I haven't asked for any questions from our little community yet. Anyone to pipe up and ask Dana any questions? And hit star 7 if you've muted yourself.
What method does Dana use to make ormus? This is Julie. What method does Dana use to make ormus?
I'm doing a wet method on it.
You mean salt water precipitate?
It's all precipitate, yes. I just let everything fall out naturally and then wash it. I'm not trying to change what's naturally occurring there. I'm just trying to keep the best of it that's possible.
For those of you who do not have any understanding or experience in doing the wet method, I have a very extensive and detailed tutorial that you guys can have if you make a contribution to Barry of $20, and I'll send you not only that, but the tutorial on how to douse for the result that you get. Because one white liquid just looks like another. And it turns out that the every single time you make ormus and take ormus, next lot you make will be more potent, will be stronger in levels of consciousness, will be stronger in potency. But how can you know this? Well, dousing is a way to know. It's very satisfying to know that you're getting a better result every time. And so I give you both of those tutorials if you make a donation to Barry of $20.
Definitely attest to the fact that it gets stronger and gets better as you become more experienced and know what you're looking for.
Do you use as your, this is Rich in Buffalo, do you use as your source Great Salt Lake salt?
Yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, we have a very beautifully developed team now that we've been working together for a long time, and it is a very thick precipitate. We try to do collection in the early fall months because that way the naturally occurring beta carotene is in that section of the lake, and it flourishes, and it actually, what I would call, the lake actually blooms. I'll put a page up on the website and put a direct from the front page on the main part of the page to show you some pictures that we've taken of the area in which we're doing the collection and some of the friends that we have that are actually involved in this. Because some people may be interested in looking at those pictures. To me, they're just, as I told Barry, they're just there. I think if you've been involved for a long time, you just kind of accept it as everyone just does this now. We do that as a team, and there's a lot of us that are involved in it. I think the same way as there is in the Ormus group itself. I see the numbers go up and then drop down occasionally. RhinoEd.org. It's Rhino, R-A-I-N-O-E-D for education. I didn't put the U on it. Rhino is kind of a family pet of ours because our health is endangered. We've been here since the beginning, and yet people's health is, like a rhinoceros, very endangered from the things that we have allowed to happen to ourselves from a lack of knowledge.
Thanks very much.
Any other questions of Dana? Don't forget to hit star 7 if you've muted yourself.
This is Arlene. Hi. I was wondering, how successful were you in helping the person who had lupus?
Well, she's returned to her normal life. This is Judy, and she has returned to her normal life. I had encouraged her to go to Colorado to the Botanical Institute there because they have worked very diligently with people in a major study on lupus, and I told her that she could probably get even better success from working directly with that group. But she had consumed all the ormus, and with all of the, she had a lot of swelling and sore areas that were very inflamed and would turn red. She couldn't put clothing near it. She said it was maybe fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue syndrome, and it was totally disabling for her. She had not worked in many, many years, and now she has returned back to a healthy lifestyle. So I had a friend of mine from South Carolina that had, he was on 12 different kinds of drugs and 2 different types of insulin, and he's returned back to his normal healthy lifestyle too. And we had a meeting with him in Charleston, South Carolina, about 3 weeks after he got started so we could actually talk to him face-to-face. And some of the doctors that I work with came out to meet him because of what happened with his pancreas production. His insulin began to be produced. His blood sugar went from over 300 on a daily average down to about 140 right after, within an hour of his first consumption of ormus, and he had every bit of his monitor results to share with us. So everyone was really excited when they saw what happened with his health and how fast it resumed, and he's still working with our team.
That's amazing because I actually have lupus and have experienced some of those things myself. And this last year, I've had areas of my body that were broken out for a very long time, and My hands became swollen once the weather changed in the fall, and they were swollen up until this last month. I tried so many different things, combinations of Ormus, the only thing that was actually giving me some relief, and, you know, a lot of healing has occurred, but then I had reoccurrence. And the only change recently is that I've had ozone treatment, and that has taken the swelling down. But for me, I feel if you guys weren't out there creating Ormus, I would be suffering a lot, and I'm grateful to all of the Ormus that I've used and tried. I feel the benefits have made my life more normal, and I don't know how grateful I am.
Thank you for that. That was lovely.
If she wants to take down my email address, or she can get it from the Ormus group, if she wants to send me out her address, I'll send her a bottle of the Ace because I think she'll see immediate results. I've been working with a doctor that's down in Phoenix, who has suffered from stealth virus infections constantly since he was diagnosed. He's had a tremendous rate of results in just a little over a week. I have another woman that's in Northern California, and she's had phenomenal results recently, too.
Sounds wonderful. I'll certainly do that.
All I can do is help.
Thank you.
Otherwise, we're just about done on this call, unless there's any other questions.
When you mentioned that Ormus attracts water or moisture to itself, and you mentioned leaving that extraction out and it changed to just going through a cycle there, can you explain that again? And is it attracting a special type of water or just normal water from the air?
Just pulled whatever was in the air out of the air. It's not a one-time occurrence either. We've seen that occur over and over. I had not told the gentleman in question, his name is Steve, but I had not told him what he should expect. I simply, because I didn't want a power of suggestion to be there. I just wanted him to observe what occurred because it's rather strange to see that happen. But what I had had him do was take this liquid and pour it into a frying pan and then heat it up until it would turn into a white powder. And I told him there's a good chance that the edges will get more heat, and if that happens, you'll probably notice a slight tanning rather than white. But don't worry about it. Just walk away and leave it alone after you take it off the heat once it's a powder, and then wait a while, and then come back and take a look at it. Well, when he did, he called me on the phone. He said he had never seen that happen. And he wanted me to describe what occurred, and I said it just knows its own natural state, I imagine.
So what did happen?
The doctors that I work with, well, it turned back into a liquid. It was a powder, and it turned straight back into a liquid. The doctors that I work with actually have a term for it. They all have PhDs. They actually have a term for what it does. I'm not a doctor, so I don't get involved in that. I'm just a mom. My dad was the one that was a doctor, but they know what it does on viral infections and what it does in the human cells. They've used it with cancer and seen a reversal of cancer. Some of it expands the cell. Some of it actually shrinks the cell. But they don't make any determination of what it will do in the human body because everyone has their own unique set of circumstances, and it was never studied or used for that aspect of it anyway. It's just if you happen to heal, that's phenomenal. In my own case, I have a daughter who had chicken pox 3 times, the last time when she was 18, very severely too. And she'd never been inoculated for chicken pox. She just happened to have chicken pox 3 times. But she has always had shingles that were very bad and that they would erupt. And in fact, we were on a trip once and a couple of the doctors actually examined her and saw that that was shingles. She has never had an outbreak of shingles since she started using a couple of the newer Ormus products that are now on the market. So we don't know exactly why, but apparently it's acted somehow, because these are things that, as it was explained to me, the shingles actually come. Somehow they're embedded in the myelin sheath. They come out. They're trying to get out of the body because they are a form of a stealth virus, like you have stealth warriors or stealth terrorists, and they actually come out and erupt, trying to get to the nerve endings to get out of the body, maybe to escape. And it created this terrible feeling on her body, very itchy and very, very tender when the clothes hit the areas that were affected, but she's never had it since, so, which is beneficial. She also has never had her annual problems where she always used to be affected by strep throat. Every year she would have strep throat. She has never had that either, so these are beneficial because it's not time-consuming on her anymore and it's not painful.
That's great. Any other questions? We'll take a question or two and then we'll wind the call up, eh? Any other questions for Dana? Speak up now, forever hold your peace.
Well, I enjoyed my time with everyone anyway. If you have any questions, I think that my number was put down. There's a team of doctors that I'm very blessed to have worked with for many years who are doing major studies from a lot of different nonprofit foundations, including our own. And we're going to be opening a university shortly in Los Angeles to continue to study these things from a perspective of bringing different students in. And it'll be called the Progressive University because we feel this is a very progressive part of science that needs to have a lot of research money put to it. So our foundation will be assisting them in funding that project. We're in the process of doing that right now.
Well, listen, I would like to thank you for so much for being on this call, Dana.
The number is 910-897-4033, and I'm up late at night because I do a lot of volunteer work. We have some contracts we're working out with China and with Africa right now that will benefit and bless a lot of people there as we're beginning to put some of our Ormus products on the market, although we don't call them Ormus. That actually we feel is a little bit of a misnomer. We call these ACE. And once they have passed a scientific group, then we're actually putting a marker on them. We think that things that people use should have like a feel of good, healthy thing attached to them. So we're actually doing that. So.
Are you going to keep trying to get more pictures of Tut?
Of course. As a matter of fact, you mentioned something about doing some kind of a documentary. And what I'll try to do, and I've been trying to do, is get him to be cooperative when I have some friends over to capture him. I have my camera ready, mm-hmm. and the battery is charged, so whenever I happen to get him, I'm going to take some live footage and put that up on the website if you'd like, Barry.
Oh, excellent. That would be wonderful.
Because that way people can see that he is. As a matter of fact, I thought it would be kind of unique to have my doctors actually take a sample of that tissue from his tail that fell off and
uh-huh.
some of the hair and collect a few of the loose hairs so that if there would be any question in anybody's mind that it's not the same cat, that will foreclose that any type of an argument.
That would be wonderful.
Because I think that would be interesting for people to see that the DNA is exactly the same and it is the same cat. Because we've been watching this cat grow this tail, you know, and take a few pictures here and there of his tail growing. And he's very, you know, he's very independent. I have a lot of woods on the back of my property.
Well, you measured his tail.
Yes, I have gotten his tail measured. That's an accomplishment to have a ruler and him in the same spot. So.